Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Welcome back as we discuss romances and relationships in our four nice selections this year, Jane Eyre, Gone with the Wind, Little Women, and Dracula. But tell me what you see as Rochester's arc of growth. We're going to talk about Scarlett more, you know, off and on, later on. She always comes up, but let's...
She always comes up.
Yeah, she always comes up.
And as we've alluded to, I see his arc of growth as deception and breaking free of deception.
Okay.
His first marriage, he's deceived by the Masons, possibly Bertha.
Mm-hmm.
Whether she's conscious of it or not, I think makes a difference.
The way he tells it, it seems like the way he tells it, she's guilty of, you know, deceiving him. In reality, we will never know because we only have his side of it. Yeah, but you're right. And his father also was a part
father,
of
yeah.
that. And that's bad. I mean, that's bad. You know?
Right. So, and especially since we know it comes from his own father, I mean, my guess is that he's seen some of that behavior of deception probably his whole life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't know that for sure.
Right.
His grand passion, I'm trying to be French here, grand passion, Céline Baron, deceives him, pretending to love him while carrying on an affair with another man.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rochester basically learns early on and through his early adulthood that relationships involve a lot of lies and a lot of manipulation.
And that is one of his most equitable comparisons to Scarlett O'Hara. She has been raised as a female in Southern society to flirt, manipulate, lie, whatever it takes to, you know, in the limited way that women could influence men, that's what she's been taught to do. And those are the methods that she understands, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they have a lot in common.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of age differences, Rochester definitely is older biologically. But Jane is more mature even at 18, 19, emotionally and morally.
Yeah.
Rochester sometimes behaves like an angsty teenager.
Yeah, that's very true. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, eventually Rochester's lies lose him what he loves and wants the most, Jane. And I would say also, even beside having Jane specifically as a wife love interest, I think just having a good, pure, honest relationship is also what he wants.
Yeah.
And that's one reason why literarily it is absolutely necessary that Jane and Rochester have to separate 2/3 of the way through the book, because they both have character growth that they need to be working on independently before either is capable of having an equal loving relationship.
Right.
Bertha's not the only obstacle.
Right.
It's also him being emotionally and morally ready to be a good partner to Jane.
Definitely. I agree with that.
I do want to acknowledge some concerns I have about the Jane Rochester
okay.
relationship.
All is not golden there. Yeah,
because
yeah.
there are issues. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I and a smaller one that I have, but I still it bugs me. It's my pet peeve, mm-hmm. and I'm going to have it with Rich. You
mm-hmm.
is Rochester indirectly refers to Jane as a lamb that he raised up to be his daughter.
Yeah,
and I don't like the depiction of her as a pet or a child.
Yeah, it's very
in
strange.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That is a phrase in that book that just sticks out as bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so strange. I agree with you on that. Yeah.
Right. In other parts of the book, he insists that she is his equal. I do hate the lamb analogy. I think he's referring to her as young and innocent and imagining that, yes, if I ever lose you, I will regret it.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger issue I have is right after the big reveal of, hey, I have a wife in the attic, Rochester confesses the whole truth to Jane, invites her to live as his mistress. It's the big temptation
mm-hmm.
scene. And Rochester's passion is threatening here.
Mm-hmm.
He warns her, I'm not a patient man. I might have to try violence to get you to see reason. And that's unacceptable.
Right.
It is true that Rochester is not physically violent, but his words are threatening.
Yeah.
And he wants Jane to love him freely and stay with him freely. He recognizes love can't be forced. And so I think that's one reason he doesn't act on this threat. But from a modern perspective, that is an acutely uncomfortable scene. And I want to acknowledge it is wrong of him to verbally threaten her.
Especially at that point. I mean, she is as low as she can get right there. You know, she has been dressed in a wedding gown, ready, or, you know, about to get, I can't remember now if she's dressed in her wedding gown. I think she is. Ready to get married. Aren't they at the church when the brother, the Bertha's brother is like, you're already, he's already married, you know. I mean, Jane is at rock bottom when Rochester, you know, invites her to live there as his mistress and just go on as they were kind of a thing. But, you know, it's just, it, and then to threaten that he could physically make her stay and be his mistress is just, I mean, she is at the rock bottom and mm-hmm. he's mean. I mean, that's cruel.
There's part of me that wonders if something in Charlotte Bronte admired passion in that form. She speaks so much of passion on Jane's side, and that even means from her childhood that she's a passionate child that way. Maybe there's something in her as an author that found that attractive, even in a form that we today find really unpalatable. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely something about the way she writes that part of the story that you can tell that she wants us, the reader, and Jane to be tempted by his physicality, not to be repulsed by it, that there's an element of that in the way she writes it, and that we read it as, ew, he's physically threatening to make her his mistress? That's called rape, you know? I mean, we read it a certain way, but her, in her time period, and the way she wrote it, it was more like part of his seduction, almost, of Jane, was that, I'm strong enough to take you by force, you know? Woohoo! I'm a bad boy, you know? I mean, it's it's not read today the way it would have been read and the way she wrote it at the time. And I think that tells us more about society at that time and her life experiences than maybe, you know, we feel today it's very different, and we read that scene, like you said, that is a really, really bad part of his character in this story coming out. And yes, he's desperate, he's about to lose the love of his life, we get it and all that, that's no excuse for physical threats, you know what I mean?
By the end of the book, I do believe that he has reformed. I don't believe he would resort to violence at that point, because he openly says, Jane, I want a wife. It's very clear he wants her, but he leaves the decision completely and calmly in her hands. He is completely recognizing her autonomy. And it doesn't hurt that she has a heap load of money at that point. She can make her own decisions.
Right, that makes all the difference for her, you know,
Right. Ultimately, Rochester's story is not that of a good man. It is the story of a man who says of himself, quote, nature meant me on the whole to be a good man, but you see, I am not. I am not a villain. You're not to suppose that. I am a trite, commonplace sinner, hackneyed in all the poor, petty dissipations with which the rich and worthless try to put on life. And Rochester's story I see as one of redemption. Is of returning him to the good morals that he imagines he's had early in life. We don't actually know if he did.
Right, exactly.
He imagines he had that. And so it's reclaiming that innocence that he lost due to various circumstances and bad decisions in his life. When we judge him by how he is midway through the book, he flunks. But we're not yet seeing his complete character arc.
Right.
One reason I believe that Bronte meant for Rochester's story to be one of redemption is we see that theme of forgiveness as a major theme throughout the book. Helen Burns, Jane's childhood friend, preaches it. Jane is able to forgive her cruel Aunt Reed. In fact, the very reason that Jane wound up in the dire circumstances that she is at the beginning of the book is because of a quarrel between her father and St. John's father, which could never be reconciled and forgiven.
Forgiveness is a big part of her story, and I suppose his as well, but I think it's more a part of hers, stemming from Helen Burns, her childhood friend. who she did not understand as a child. I mean, Jane flat out says, I don't understand how she could be so forgiving, you know, and yet that's what she ends up growing into being. She becomes more like Helen later in life when she's all of 19 years old, you know, and is able to forgive her cruel aunt, who is cruel to the end, let's just say. I mean, she never stops being cruel. So,
Yeah, side note, we can get into this when we do spirituality, but I don't know if I could have forgiven Aunt Ree.
Oh, boy. Themes of forgiveness are always rough for me, because I'm afraid I have an unforgiving soul.
I don't see you like that at all.
Oh, boy. Yeah. But so you feel like their relationship works. Join us next time as we continue our discussion in our four nice books, Jane Eyre, Gone with the Wind, Little Women, and Dracula. This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.